Welcome to the Road Ahead Cafe. Hang on to your hat and enjoy the ride, because you're about to get some powerful insights and practical hacks that will take your daily life to the next level. And now, here are your hosts, Rick, Frank, and Peter.
Welcome back to the Road Ahead Cafe. I'm your host, Rick Gabrielli, and I'm here with change facilitator Frank Vandenhorst and mindfulness coach Peter M. Fellows. And in this week's episode, we go behind the words. We become what we behold. We shape our tools, and then our tools shape us, by Marshall McLuhan. Peter, can you tell us something about what you'll be sharing with us today?
Sure. You know, there's no place I'd rather be than here with you two guys, Rick and Frank, and our audience. Unless, of course, there is anywhere else I could be. But anyway, terms of my parole are rather strict, so I have to limit my running around. So today we're going to probe behind the words, and I'm particularly interested in the second part of the quotation. We shape our tools, and then our tools shape us. So that is what I'm going to focus on in just a very few short minutes. Rick.
Great stuff, Peter. Thank you. Frank, how about you?
Well, the interesting thing is that we become what we behold, and we shape our tools, and then our tools shape us. The latest and hottest tool on the internet right now, OpenIA, ChatGTP, well, it's really hot. If you type in a question, it automatically generates an answer using advanced algorithms. So what I did, I typed in this text and see what IA tool is going to be, to send to me. And I'm going to quote what the algorithm thought of and created, just as a way to use the tool, and it is using us as right at this moment. So I love to share it with you guys.
Great stuff, Frank. So this is what I'll be sharing. Many years ago, perhaps around 1972, I read a quote in one of my library books, "We have become the tools of our tools." I later learned that this was from Henry David Thoreau, probably around 1850. Many of us still feel like this today. Take our smartphones, for example. I'll explain more in a few minutes. Peter, what do you have for us today?
All right, here's what I'm thinking. Whenever technology makes taking action easier by removing the need to deliberate, it's the technology that determines the nature of our experience in life, not us. Dobby, our conditioned brain, likes not having to make a decision because it saves energy. It minimizes the potential for any loss of fulfillment or self-worth. But what do I mean by that? Even I'm not sure. But let me give you an example. You know, whenever you're offered an upgrade on an app, you're given the opportunity to just click a button saying you've read the accompanying agreement rather than actually having to read it. That makes it easier for us to get on to the good part, which is using the app. It's like when you get a Christmas present as a kid. All you wanted to do is to rip off the wrapping paper so you could get to the gift. You didn't want to waste time reading the card that came with it. Yeah, I know, you love me. Merry Christmas. You wanted to get to the thing. If we had actually read, or if we actually had to read every lengthy technical agreement that comes with each minor upgrade to an app, it'd take a lot of time, which could be better used or spent using the app. Or if not, at least doing the next best thing, which is watching cat videos. It would also mean a lot of wasted time trying to figure out what the heck the agreements were talking about. And if we couldn't understand them, we might feel a little stupid, which is a loss of self-value. And what if we read something that we didn't like in the contract? I mean, then we might have to do the very hard thing and not accept the upgrade or the app that we really wanted. And what if we read the agreement and missed out on something, which came back to sting us later? Then we'd feel doubly stupid because, yeah, we did read the agreement. Oh, by the way, heads up, make sure you read the agreement that comes on your next phone patch. Rumor has it that if you click the accept button, you're agreeing to give up your firstborn child. Of course, not saying that you might feel that's a bad thing, just saying, you know, keep an eye on it. So the thing is, as your smart devices log what items you click on and how often you click on that type of item and how long you stay on that item before moving on and how long you return to that item and where you were when you logged onto that item and what you were doing when you logged onto that item and where the screen on the screen the item was placed, the more they will make only that type of item more available to you because they know you're more likely to buy it. And then because that type of item is more easily available to you, you'll read more of that, and it'll feel like the world agrees with you, because every time you go on your phone, you're getting the same type of information that is you enjoy and that you read. So your conditioned brain gets trapped into seeing the world in a certain way because the machine tried to serve you better by giving you more of what it thinks you want. The promise of tracking your moves on the internet was that you wouldn't be bombarded by advertisements and ideas that you weren't interested in. And that's how we shaped our tool. The problem is, or at least one of the problems is, the tool is now shaping us by its selection of what we see. And even when we think we're doing a worldwide internet search, we're actually viewing a very narrowly defined, carefully curated selection of things we already agree on. Here's what the pundits mean when they say the right and the left live in their own echo chambers. Dobby, your conditioned brain, loves this because it requires a lot of energy to engage with uncomfortable or unfamiliar ideas, and having to change your opinion might mean admitting you were wrong and possibly losing value points. And that's why I've adopted the maxim, I'm never wrong. But sometimes it takes me a while to reach right. So if someone says, Peter, you now admit you were wrong, I can answer in good conscience, no, I wasn't wrong. The last time we talked, I just hadn't got to right yet. Now, you might be tempted to think, hey, let me enjoy my warm, comfortable delusion. The fact is, you aren't really enjoying it. You cannot level up the flow and fulfillment in your daily life if Dobby's limited mindset is being reinforced 24/7 by a machine. Charlie Chaplin prophetically said, machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. And even the questions we ask using our tools are shaped by the answers we've shown we prefer. So how can we escape this catch-22? Well, to mitigate this effect, there are specific and very clever actions you can take. There are ingenious strategies you can employ, but I don't want to give you any of those. I don't want to give you them because I know that they will work for only some of you. What I want to do is to go beyond the menu of solutions that others offer you, even while acknowledging how effective they might be for some of you. I want to encourage you to coach Dobby, your conditioned brain, to return to the source of your better informed, perfectly personalized inner guidance, your pathfinder. And you can do that. You can guide Dobby away from his self-limiting biases and reconnect with him, her, with the action, the strategy, the path that will work best for you, based upon who you are, how you are feeling right now, and what your specific situation is. Would that be something worth checking out? What would you feel like 10 days from now if it leveled up the flow, if you leveled up the flow of and the fulfillment in your daily life? How much could you level up the flow and fulfillment in just 10 days? Why not take our first 10-day challenge to find out? Be my guest. No charge. TheSource123.com. Rick?
Great stuff, Peter. Frank, what do you got today?
Okay, this is what ChatGPT created or generated, but let's say it created. And I'm going to quote the whole piece. There we go. Marshall McLuhan, a Canadian philosopher and communication theorist, famously said, "We become what we behold, we shape our tools, and then our tools shape us." This statement suggests that the technology we create not only reflects our values, beliefs, and needs, but also has the power to shape what we think, act, and interact with the world around us. In other words, we develop new tools and technologies. We do so with certain assumptions and intentions in mind. These tools then become part of our daily lives and influence the way we perceive and interact with the world. Over time, it can even change the way we think, communicate, and behave. For example, the rise of social media platforms has changed the way people communicate and share information. We now have access to a vast amount of information and can connect with people from all over the world instantaneously. However, social media has also been criticized for promoting a culture of instant gratification, attention-seeking, and superficiality. Similarly, The development of smartphones and other mobile devices has made it easier for us to stay connected and productive on the go. However, it has also been linked to the rise of addiction, distraction, and social isolation. Therefore, McLuhan's statement reminds us that we need to be conscious of the tools we create and how we use them. We need to ask ourselves what values and assumptions are embedded in these technologies and what their potential impact might be. Only then we can ensure that we are using technology in a way that aligns with our values and promotes our well-being. End of quote. Reading ChatGPT's answer, it focuses on two important aspects, I think. Number one, know your own values and assumptions and check those and check what assumptions could be embedded in these technologies. Do they match? And in what way? Number two, you have to balance the possibility to connect with people from all over the world instantaneously and sharing info with a culture of instantaneous gratification, attention seeking, and superficiality. Balance is the key word here. For me, this means that I use my intuition and critical reasoning capabilities to adjust my compass to travel the road ahead in a balanced, harmonious, and effective ways, and use those great tools that are available. Rick, what are your ideas about this statement?
Wow. Frank revolutionized the world, man, with that article. That's good stuff. Wow. So here's what I want to share with you today. I grew up in an auto body shop. Actually went in there on a stroller at age 1.5. I remember looking around at all those shiny objects hanging everywhere. At age 9, my dad finally let me come to work for the summer, and my first job was to pick up the tools and clean up after the men. I always wanted to know how each tool was used, and then I put each one in its proper place. I learned early that tools make the man, not clothing, as you all think. Every job was made easier or more difficult depending on the tools. As I grew into a young adult, I never forgot those early lessons and the value of my tools. In coaching, I've used tools and the tool metaphor to inspire and educate. As a technology and marketing professional, I need tools to manage data, customers, and business strategies. My various toolboxes may have changed, but the love of tools has just kept on growing. Peter, your final thoughts?
Very profound. So long before my hero, Marshall McLuhan, there was Winston Churchill, who understood that we become a product of the things we create. He said famously, "We shape our buildings, and afterwards, our buildings shape us." And we have to dwell within the world constructed by those selected thoughts that Dobby, our conditioned self, chooses to dwell on. I think we found a simple way to help you free Dobby, your conditioned self, from the limiting bondage he, she finds herself in. I'd just like you to have a come and look at what we're doing, thesource123.com.
Great stuff, Peter. Frank, you want to share your final thoughts?
Yes. We become what we behold. We shape our tools, and then our tools shape us. That was the statement. I often tell my students at law school the following points in order to assess such a situation or any situation. Know your values. Keep an open mind. Use your ability for critical reasoning and ask yourself the following questions. Who is telling you what? How does that person know this? Can you trust it? Why? Are there any contradictions in the story that has been told? What is the evidence? What sources are being used? Is there something missing? And is there a kind of logic in all of this? Just asking yourself these questions will help to validate whatever you are reading or seeing. Wrap it up, make a choice. Don't let the tools manage you. You drive your own bus in life. Not the other way around, but looking at your YouTube videos might wonder, etc. If you look if you love, if you cherish us and what you're hearing here, check out what we're building for you at The Source, your online peer coaching community at The Source 123. And as always, what you think about and think about, you bring about. Have a wonderful day. Rick, what about you?
Thank you, Frank. Great stuff. So here's my final thoughts. When we gather and love on the tools of our lives, we can reach unlimited heights, both personally and professionally. What's in your toolbox? Thank you for joining us today for the Road Ahead Cafe. If we've helped you feel a little better and you feel you'd like to pay it forward, ask yourself, who do I know who might also enjoy this podcast? Don't be shy. Share the good vibes. We look forward to getting together with you again in 2 weeks. And remember, savor your day today.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Road Ahead Cafe. Hungry for more? Don't miss out. Follow this channel and be sure to subscribe to our email at theroadaheadcafe.com. Thank you for stopping by. See you next time.